everybody. It's Chris. Just a quick heads up here. This is our first Everybody Climbs episode, and Everybody Climbs is a collaborative project that's been created by Emily Chin Newton, who is an adaptive sports reporter. We're putting these episodes out on the Power Company podcast as well as on Sins and Suffers. So if you enjoy this episode, you should go check out the others that are already out over on Sins and Suffers. And Emily does a fantastic job producing these episodes. So before we even get started with these, I just want to say thanks to Emily for putting these together and for getting the word out there about adaptive climbing. All right, let's get into it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Everybody Climbs. I'm your host, Emily Chin Newton. This is a collaborative podcast presented across Plugtone audio platforms about and from para and adaptive climbers. From community building to competition training, we get into it on this show. This is a collaboration with the Power Company podcast and Chris Hampton. So if this is the first time that you're hearing my voice on this platform and you're like, what is going on? Don't worry. This is still the Power Company podcast. Chris, still your regular host. I'm just going to be popping in for an episode about every other month or so as a part of this collaborative project to bring you more content about para and adaptive climbers. Today on the show, we hear from Ben Mayforth, a decorated climber well known for dialing in his training regimen. He's a paraclimbing World Cup multi-medalist, and since 2019, he hasn't missed a silver medal at the paraclimbing World Championships to date. He's an avid boulderer, low-key trad climber, and says he loves a short sport route. Ben has a reputation of being precise and regimented in his training, focusing on all the little details and bringing home medals with just insane finger strength. But he surprised me in this conversation by talking about the elements of his training that he's let go of recently, the points of discipline that he has loosened in the last year, and the results that he's seen from that letting go. Today's episode is an excerpt from that conversation. We recorded this in the fall of 2023 in Kentucky's Red River Gorge, where he and I and over 100 other paraclimbers gathered for the annual Adaptive Climbers Festival. A couple of days before the other climbers arrived, we recorded our conversation outside on the back porch. So you'll hear birds and rustling leaves. You might hear trucks on the mountain parkway in the distance. And we start the conversation with talking about how Ben got involved with the paraclimbing community back in 2016.
So I was training in a gym in Timonium, and a friend of mine saw a flyer for the Adaptive Climbing Festival in 2018 in HP 40, Horsepens 40 down in Alabama. Really weird place for a bunch of disabled people to meet in the middle of nowhere on the top of a mountain in Alabama. But it was like a climbing trip, so I was like, oh man, I'm really stoked.
And this was, when you're talking about the festival, was this their second year?
Very first year. Okay. So I went the first year, and I've gone every year since. So I drove down from Maryland, 12, 14 hours, mm-hmm. all the way to Horsepens, Alabama, to go meet a bunch of people that I'd never met before, that were all disabled climbers. I got there, and the first thing they said was, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Maryland. And they're like, you must know Scott. What I didn't know is there was an adapted community around me inside of my own gym network right down the road, about 2 hours down in Rockville. And I had no idea.
Wow.
And then I got introduced into the community and then was told about Adaptive Nationals, another adaptive bouldering comp that was happening in Rockville like a month later. So the very first time I went to the festival, I got connected with all these different people and just showed up out of the blue and just started going to every event.
So you've already kind of started to get into it, but talk about what is the role that the festival has played in your life and what it means to you, really.
It was really the start of everything. I had no idea what I was going to get into, where I was going in life. Like I was going through a pretty big identity crisis. It was like the year after I graduated. I'd been part of a wheelchair basketball team most of my life. And this was like the first year I didn't have a team to go hang out with, go train with, go have like some sort of consistency. So like I was going to the climbing gym all the time and just training and getting to know people there. But it was a little different. Like, you'll be in the gym, especially with, like, a physical disability, and people will spray you down with beta, and it's not always the most helpful. So I went to the festival, got in tuned with all the competitions, made the national team my first year, and then started preparing for the Paraclimbing World Cup in Innsbruck, Austria.
And what year was that? Was that
2018?
That was 18. Okay, yeah. So this all happened that first year.
All happened that first year of, like, getting introduced into adaptive climbing.
What was that like for you, like, mentally, to be taken from a place where you weren't really sure, you had lost your team, really, that you had been part of your whole life, and then to regain this thing?
It was a little more grounding, but it also made me, like, very hungry to, like, keep pushing. Because I was maybe a year and a half into climbing at that point, and then realized, like, that was going to be the new thing that I created discipline with. Mm. Like, my dad was a climber, my uncle were climbers. Just felt right, felt natural.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Climbing was, like, the one thing where I was like, oh, I think I'm meant to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried a bunch of different sports. I've been a high-performance athlete in several different sports in the adaptive realm before. But climbing was like, I'm able to be a part of something, but also be an individual at the same time. Mm-hmm. Know how to be a team player, but also take accountability for myself.
Mm.
So in 2018, I did not do well at the world championships. I had done well at, like, every other comp I did that year.
Hmm. And what category?
The one I've been in the whole time has been RP2.
Okay. And for people who are unfamiliar, can you kind of break down the acronym?
Yeah. RP means limited range and power.
Mm-hmm.
And we have three different levels for that. We have RP1, which is the most severe. So usually people that have an affected limbs of three or more, or some severe neurological disability where their range and power is affected in a certain point scale. That's how it is nowadays.
And they're really specific about it. It's about how it breaks down and affects your climbing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And didn't used to be that way, but now it is specifically related to how it breaks down your climbing.
And we should just say, like, it's complicated, the classification system, and that would be a whole other podcast episode.
That is a topic for several hours of discussion.
Yeah, and probably not on this platform, which is a good transition, we should say. So as we're rolling out this podcast, putting on several different platforms, whenever we're here on the Power Company Climbing Podcast, it's really mostly going to be about training, fitness, that drive, that discipline, which you've already kind of alluded to, your discipline and taking accountability in your own sports and training. So let's get into that now. Yeah. I'd love to hear how you break down your training mentality, if you can break it down into several different categories or however you see it.
I can break it down into several different years. So
Okay. First
year, it was just trying to get endurance and building strength and power in my upper body. And so I kind of took that after that first world championship of, like, okay, how do I increase this strength, increase this power to get around what I need to get around with?
And can you give us a little bit of context too, so just people know, like, what those things are that you're getting around?
Yeah, I have spina bifida, so my lower body is affected with partial paralysis. So from my knees down, I have limited sensation and limited strength and power in my legs, so I have to kind of work around, like, how much I can do with them. My right leg's more affected than my left, so I can do more on my left side, where it's like rocking over on my right side of my leg is, like, terrifying, while I can rock over on my left and be pretty stable.
Yeah. And we'll say as a side note too, since this is one of the first episodes for folks listening and you may not be familiar, like, this is not that uncommon. If once you get into the world of paraclimbing, there's lots of people. So it's not like you are an anomaly.
Yeah. No, it is perfectly normal. Yeah. People have to work around different issues and create different techniques, which is just like everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else has to figure out how their body works, how their technique works, where their center of gravity is, when their center of gravity changes, how to change their technique. That way they can have a better proprioception of where they are on the wall.
Yeah.
So, like, that was kind of the main thing I was trying to do.
In the first couple years.
In the first couple years. Mm-hmm. Really build that strength, build that power, see how hard I could actually train. And then going into the 2019 season, like, I did as many local bouldering comps as possible. I helped put on a few different comps just to get that competition experience and figure out what my actual, like, competition routine was. Because I always had a competition routine for, like, wheelchair basketball and or a game day routine for those. And I didn't really have it for climbing yet. So I spent the next year of kind of exploring, like, how to get that mindset ready to basically be an animal and bring that animal out in myself again.
Yeah.
Going into the winter of 2019, I definitely started getting a little more into the linear cycles. So I planned my cycles out pretty definitively, like did a 4-week strength cycle with hangboard and strength boulders, then did a 4-week power cycle, and then a 2-week endurance cycle, slowly working in power endurance throughout the whole entire realm. And I scheduled it just right to peak at like every major event I had. And I didn't intentionally do that. It just worked out inside of those mesocycles. It worked the way it should have worked, because in 2019, I went from getting a 10th place ranking in the world at Innsbruck to a 2nd place ranking.
And, like, there's such a huge difference in the level of competition from the things that happen nationally here. And then once you get to the World Cups or championships, it's totally different.
It's totally different.
So that makes sense that that's where you saw the benefits coming through.
Mm-hmm. But then, like, from, like, 2019 to, like, 2021, I think I touched a rope before competitions maybe, like, 3 or 4 times, and I would just do power endurance circuits.
Okay, so you were just working your endurance up to the point that was necessary.
Yes, that was necessary for competition. Okay. I'm a boulderer at heart. At that time, I did not need all that extra endurance. And during that time, we were very specific with, like, how we were going to use our feet. So, like, the guy I was training with at that time, we would write down specific objectives each morning for my feet and how to prime my feet. So priming is waking up the neurons between your brain and your body that you're going to use. That way you can call upon that action when you need it, is the simplest way I like to describe
it. That's interesting. And is that something that you do because of your disability, or is that something that you do because you're a climber and it makes, I mean, I'm asking because it makes it, it sounds like something that makes sense that we should all do.
Both.
Yeah. Okay.
Takes longer for me to prime my legs and to wake those up. But it's something that every climber should do with every part of their body. I don't need to prime my upper body that well, but I do need to prime my lower body extremely well. So I spend a little more time kind of waking up and being very mindful about how to get those legs moving and how to engage the legs in a certain way that I want them to.
That makes a lot of sense. So, and I'll say, because it's one of the first episodes, so I have a condition, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar
yes.
with it? Yeah, so all of my tendons, well, all of my connective tissue is too loose. There's something goes wrong with the cross-linking. It's a genetic condition. So it affects a lot of things, but most visibly my tendons and ligaments are too loose. And so having to prime the muscle or the body part, like, that makes a hell of a lot of sense. My tendons and ligaments don't generate the tension that triggers a muscle to fire.
Yeah.
And so I have to do that mentally and get it ready to, okay, now we have to go.
Yeah.
It's much more of like, I have to tell my body to engage my glutes because they don't just get that signal to fire. Or like me trying to jump, it's hysterical. Because I'm getting none of the signals. Even if I could bend my knees, I could bend my legs really deeply, but there's still not enough tension generated to give my muscle the signal to fire. So it has to be much more of a mental game.
Yeah. And that makes sense mm-hmm. completely. Like, it does take a little bit more time to kind of prime those legs to get moving, to keep tension throughout my whole entire body mm-hmm. to stay on the wall. So those were, like, the big training aspects that we kind of went through But going into like the fall of 2021 and the spring of 2022, there was just some huge aspects of my training that I was completely missing. My movement was getting better. Like, everyone could see that I was using my feet more, that I could climb more fluidly, not just in a campus realm, but like movement wise in general with my feet. I was still strong and just being able to hammer out sevens and eights on the kilter board. But I still wasn't happy with how that was going. And I was still training like I used to, but I wasn't seeing the gains that I wanted to. I started seeing diminishing returns. I actually got weaker at a certain point when I was hangboarding like it was, campus boarding, like going with that very linear principle.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm still not getting what I need out of this. And I kind of like took a step back, and I was going to grad school at the time for performance enhancement and writing programs for other paraclimbers. And realized like, you know, there's more to climbing than what I'm doing. What do I need to change? And so I kind of took a step back from that and just started climbing.
Can you identify what it was that felt like you were missing? Or did you not know at that point what you were missing?
I just kind of knew that my movement wasn't where I wanted it.
Just wasn't quite there.
It wasn't quite.
Mm-hmm. But the strength was.
The strength was there, mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I can still hold one hand off of a 7mm crimp if I want to, which is stupid. I have that ability. But I just said, I'm going to just stop and just climb. I'm going to follow a couple principles here and there. So, like, I have a consistent interval repeater principle that I do where I get on a kilter board or a tension board, something like that, and I either at my flash or two above flash or sometimes three above flash, give it three attempts and move on, and I'll do about 10 of those with 2-minute breaks in between each. But also really specifically finding boulder problems that I wasn't good at or finding styles I wasn't good at. So trying to make sure I was getting all the realms of climbing in.
So not just picking a higher grade, but picking a style that you
picking
know.
Picking a style I suck at, basically. And then I started doing more trips to Slovenia, visiting my fiance and climbing on limestone. And that helped movement immensely because I couldn't just power through limestone. Limestone's a type of rock that you really have to be careful on. It's just slick and slimy.
Yeah.
So climbing on outdoor rock and specifically limestone actually helped my climbing immensely.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then I started also just letting go of old past things where I was just so angry, so aggressive, so upset with things that I realized that I need to let go of certain aspects of my life and just enjoy parts of my life. And I think my fiance helped me really kind of realize that I was holding on to some things that I really shouldn't have and started letting go. And when I started doing that and just working on movement in general and just having a good time in competition rather than wanting to win all the time, I actually ended up winning. So just took a step back and calm down a little bit, and that's when I saw the huge performance gains and saw my ability go through the roof. And that's when I started sending V11, started sending V12, flashing V8, and my movement just got better.
And when you talk about letting go, learning that some of this was having to let go, I think that's a principle that a lot of us can relate to in different ways. Can you talk about specifically what were some of those things that you were letting go of?
Holding on to past traumas. It was a lot of trauma oriented. Letting go of, like, that I wasn't where I wanted to be as a human at that time. And just kind of let go and kind of slowly take in the fact that it's okay to be a late bloomer. Like, I always wanted things to happen really quickly. And that delayed satisfaction, gratification, that delayed gratification really was a hard thing for me, especially like growing up as a disabled person. Because like, if you're in pain as a kid dealing with a bunch of surgeries and stuff like that, they hand you a button and the pain goes away type of deal.
That's what you wanted.
That's what I wanted. I just wanted something similar to what they conditioned me to. And that delayed gratification was always a hard thing for me, and it still can be a hard thing for me.
Yeah.
And some of that old substance abuse that I used to have, let go a lot of that.
Mm.
There were periods in time where I went completely sober for 5 years of my life so I could be better at climbing.
Mm.
But I also realized that didn't make me a good human either. Mm. Unfortunately, like, that realm of, like, stone cold sober as possible was actually quite harmful to the way I looked at friends, how I looked at family, how I looked at everything in life. And it put me in a really, like, high and mighty realm, and at a certain point I was like, that's not healthy either.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I had to let go of that. Mm-hmm. And so I started being okay with drinking again.
So the letting go was, like, not just related directly to climbing. This is just letting go of shit in your life that affected your climbing.
That completely affected my life in climbing. Like, I tend to differ to extremes. Like, I do have bipolar, and, like, my mood swing one way or another. And, like, I thought training was going to be the thing that, like, evened everything out and kind of kept me balanced. Mm. But I realized that was more unhealthy, and the way I trained and the way I focused on training was unhealthy in itself. And kind of taking a step back and learning to enjoy life again.
Yeah, I mean, that's why when we sat down and I said, yeah, I want to talk about your training. And the first thing you said was...
I stopped doing it.
It's really remarkable.
Like, I'll do, like, getting ready for comps and stuff like that. I'll do general, like, endurance training. Just getting that endurance fitness back. But, like, mostly it's just, like, get on some routes and learn how to use your body differently. Also, climbing outside. That was another thing. I just climbed a lot outside this year.
And do you enjoy it more outside,
too? I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't really train the same way, but, like, you learn more. And you learn more about what you can trust.
Mm, say more about that. You mean, like, foot placement and
stuff
like that?
Yeah, foot placement, mm-hmm. hand placements. I moved to Salt Lake, so, like, there's trad everywhere. So now I'm starting to learn how to place my hands in cracks and learning how to do donut locks and actually pull off of a donut lock. That way, if I see something weird or different in a comp, I know, oh, I can fill this off. And for comps, I also, I'm a big hold nut.
What do you mean? You memorize
the
holds?
I memorize holds. I memorize where the good parts of holds are.
Like, by the brand?
By the brand.
Oh my
by
God.
The type.
Uh-huh.
By the, it's so bad.
You're not the only one, though. I know others who do this, too.
A lot of comp climbers do that. Mm-hmm. And, like, you just pick up a catalog of, like, oh, I know where the good parts are on this hold.
Right.
And it just is strategic.
Mm-hmm. You said you've stopped, you know, quote-unquote stop training, which I know doesn't mean, like, entirely. But you also said that you have kept up with a couple core principles. Can you go through those core principles that you still hold today?
I go by a non-linear progression, so I typically have one strength day, one power-ish day, one power endurance day. It's mostly endurance at this point. I climb with a lot of paraclimbers in Salt Lake, so we just get on ropes, and I just consider ropes just endurance. I don't consider it power endurance or thuggy or anything like that, even though, like, they can be thuggier routes. It's just strength, power, and endurance now. And then I just have a general movement day.
And this is different from the training that you were doing before, which was, like, really heavy and hangboards. Like, talk about what that was.
I would do a lot of, like, power lifting, strength lifting, mixing up different tempos with lifting. I do calisthenics now. And I'll mess with tempo.
Okay.
That's my injury prevention now, is just calisthenics. I don't think I've picked up a weight since April.
Okay. And we should say what It's September. It's October. It's the middle of October.
It's the middle of October.
Okay, yeah.
So for almost 6 months, I haven't picked up really a weight. Okay. And I've just done body weight stuff. And I feel better. I feel stronger. I'm climbing better. I don't look as defined and cut as I used to, but I'm definitely climbing way harder and way better just off of move experience and just enjoying climbing again. And that general fitness is still there. That, like, if I wanted to go pump out my normal bench press numbers, I could probably do it right now. But is it really going to do anything?
It's not helping you.
It's not helping me.
And that's, as, I mean, it's the title of the show, Every Body Climbs. Like, it's different for every body. Yeah. I know I'm not at a point where I need to stop training, given my condition. Like, I literally, like, I can't. I'm not allowed to not, because my tendons are so weak. I have to strengthen my muscles. Like, I brought dumbbells with me this week because, like, I can't not train that tensile strength.
Yeah.
So where were you at? Like, talk about how you knew and where you were when you were like, okay, this is enough. Like, I am going to reach diminishing returns.
When I campus V11.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And something about that was like, do I really need to train fingers anymore? Uh-huh. I'm like, I'll do density hangs as part of my antagonist training just to keep the other side of the forearms happy. And to keep my tendon density up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't need to train my campus board stuff. I have this power. Mm-hmm. And if I need to, I can do a quick 4 to 8 week cycle.
Right, to get, like, ready for something.
To get ready for something.
But to be clear, like, you're not saying we should all just stop training.
I'm not saying you should all stop training, but I do. What I am saying is definitely keep an eye on, like, what you're doing. And always add in more movement days than you think you should. I think a lot of people, everyone's like, oh, one movement day. I was like, movement should be a focus every day. That's the biggest thing. And it's a movement-oriented sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to train. But I don't think we need to put as heavy as an emphasis on hangboarding and campus boarding like we do. I think if we work on our technique and we supplement with strength and power, I think all around we're going to be better. And also the letting go. I think that's the biggest thing, is just like knowing who you are inside of your own self and your climbing and your community. I think that's the biggest thing that, like, Adaptive Climbers Fest has helped me realize. I mean, if I didn't have Adaptive Climbers Fest, I don't know where I would be in my training. I don't know where I'd be in my life. Like, because of that one festival, I had this, and still have this, amazing climbing career that I could have never imagined. And
yeah, I feel like there's more to this half of the conversation that I want to pick up later on the other platform, on Sends and Suffers, where we kind of talk more about, like, the cultural and community aspect of adaptive climbing, because I feel like there's a lot there, just as you're kind of opening up this part of the conversation about community and how that... they're not separate. Like, the community has also improved your climbing.
And especially the international community. I place a good majority of my drive and my training and the want to get better on wanting to try and beat fellow competitors and to be able to give that ability to push.
To push the sport,
push
too.
Push the sport. Mm-hmm. But now it's not even competitors. It's, I want to push my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I text people in Germany and Austria and Slovenia about, like, what's going on in their training and getting psyched on what they're excited about. And I think that's when I go to these IFSC comps, I want to make sure that I'm not letting, number one, my country down and my USA paraclimbing family down, but I don't want to let my international family down either. I want to make sure that I'm pushing them to the furthest that they can go to. And I think that's, the community aspect has been a huge part of my training too.
Because there is this, like, back and forth, the communication, you are each, say more.
Respect.
Okay.
It's the mutual respect and the mutual respect towards grinding towards greatness. All while everyone's trying to keep a day job or...
Yeah, it's a grind.
It's a grind. And...
Yeah.
Eating the same foods over and over and over again. Like, when I met my fiance, she's like, you eat peanut butter and jelly every day?
That was going to be my guess. I was going to be like, I feel like there's a lot of peanut butter and jelly involved.
And potato bread. Martin's potato bread.
Oh, well, the potato bread is the fluffiest.
It is.
It's the best. So you're talking about the, like, wanting to, you maintain the psych and wanting to make sure that other people are, like, just globally. But I want to know what you are psyched about and, like, kind of talk, as we, just to wrap up the conversation, what are you psyched on? What are your goals? We can talk about specifically here, too, the Maisie May.
Maisie May is my goal for the end of the week.
Here in the red.
Here in the red. It is a short 13A. It's, like, 35 feet, 40 feet.
Because at one point it was a boulder problem.
It was a boulder problem. Mm-hmm. And then, it's a pretty high boulder problem.
Here, I have the book here, actually. Yeah, just in case people want to look it up, it might have another name.
Supercharger. It's the start of Supercharger. It's the boulder problem that goes into Supercharger.
Yeah, okay,
there
we go.
So Maisie May, I really want to do that one. So.
What else do you want to get on while you're here?
Starry Night. It's a 12A. It's just super overhanging and kind of heady for me. And I have to do it a different way because everybody just goes straight up from this one point. But I have to traverse left, way away from the bolt, and do this really big campus move so I can Superman clip the next clip.
Well, I think that's why it's heady for you.
Yeah.
That sounds terrifying.
And then go into this crimp section right after that with no rest. Trying to clip that is just like... What am I doing?
Where is it? What area?
It's in the gallery.
Okay, that was, yeah. Well, I hope that you have an awesome time at the rest of the festival. My toes are getting cold out here. I don't know if
Yeah, I'm getting cold.
I'm cold. So thank you so much, though, for all of this, and I'll see you throughout the week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Emily.
You've been listening to Everybody Climbs. This is a collaboration with the Power Company podcast and Chris Hampton. If you want to reach out about what you heard on today's show or have ideas for future coverage, you can send a message on the contact page of plugtoneaudio.com. Keep your ear to the ground for more adaptive content, and if you liked it, let us know by liking, subscribing, commenting, you know the drill. I'm Emily Chen Newton, an adaptive sports reporter. You can find my other work on NPR, in Climbing Magazine, Gear Junkie, Climbing Business Journal, and others. That's all for today. Climb on, climb strong, and remember, everybody climbs.